Planning Commission meeting Tuesday, February 6th, 2024. It's now 6 o'clock. This meeting may also be viewed on Channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on www.slu-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by calling 805-321-6639. The phone line is open now.
Oh, turn the mic on. Okay. Who knew? Never had to do that before.
Now you guys have to do that.
Yes.
I can hear myself now. All right. Would you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Ms. Rotana, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Mann?
Present.
Commissioner Swift?
Present.
Chair Halverson?
Here.
Please let the record show that Commissioner Hoffman and Vice Chair Holden are not present.
Very good. So our first order of business tonight is the appointment of a new chair and a vice chair. Since this is the beginning of a new year, we do this every year. So I would open it up to a motion for someone to be our chair.
Oh, you didn't say earlier this was happening tonight.
No, I did, but you didn't hear me.
I missed that part.
Well, I'll move that Commissioner Mann be our new chair.
Very good. And I guess
I'll accept the nomination.
I will second it since no one else is here. All in favor of Commissioner Mann being our next commission, our chairman for the next year, please say aye.
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 Can I vote for myself?
Aye. Certainly.
Yes.
Certainly. All right. Congratulations. You're now our new chair. And you get to take the chair.
Vice Chair.
Oh, you want to do Vice Chair first? Okay. All right. I thought I was out as soon as I did it. All right. So let's do the Vice Chair then. Do we have a nomination for Vice Chair? Well, I would nominate Commissioner Swift.
I will second the nomination.
Very good. All in favor of Commissioner Swift being our Vice Chair, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. Right now.
Oh, I take the chair now.
Yes, you do.
This is so exciting.
I know.
Do you need any of this? Is all for
this
me?
This is all for you.
Okay, great.
Well, you're going to do that. Okay. Let's sit over here. Okay. Yeah.
And then the music stops and we all take our seats.
Right.
Does that mean I need to move over too?
You can stay there if you'd like.
Okay, so
great.
She's gonna we need to call the roll again.
Yep.
Okay.
Say, yep. So you're down to here.
Yes. So, Ms. Rotana, would you please call the roll once more?
Commissioner
Halverson?
Here.
Vice Chair Swift?
Here.
And Chair Mann?
Here.
All right, good job.
At this time, the Planning Commission will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. The Commission should, by motion, adopt the agenda as presented or as revised. So, are there any changes to the agenda?
Nope.
Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I move that we approve the agenda as submitted.
And do I have a second?
I will second that motion.
All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And any opposed? The motion passes unanimously. We come to public communications. Please call in at 805-321-6639 if you would like to provide any public comment. During this time, the Commission will allow public communication. Any member of the public may address the Commission for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total in any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this Commission. The Commission will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the commission cannot act on items that are not on the agenda. The slip here, is this for this part of the meeting or for later?
That's for item two.
Okay, great. So the person who gave me this slip, we'll get to you. There's multiple times when we do public communication. Is there Ms. Rotana, is there anyone on the line for public communication at this time?
No, there's not.
I will now open the consent agenda. Is there any member of the public who wishes to address the commission on the item listed under the consent agenda? If so, call in at 805-321-6639. Is there anyone here for the consent agenda? Anyone on the line for the consent agenda? Am I supposed to close and open the public?
Public hearing, yes.
Sorry. We'll get this. Public comment on the consent agenda is closed. Moving on, we need a motion to approve the minutes of the December 19th, 2023 Planning Commission meeting.
I'll move that we approve the minutes as published.
And I second.
All in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes. We now go to the public hearing items. Moving on down. So, as a reminder, if you would like to call in for public comment on this item, please call in at 805-321-6639. Item 2 on our agenda is the development application 24-04. The applicant is the City of Grover Beach, Community Development Director Megan Martin. There will be a presentation now, I believe.
Good evening. Megan Martin, Community Development Director. So before I begin, I'd actually like to first introduce your commission to our new senior planner. This is Kyle Bell. Kyle joined us last month and has hit the ground running. It's been really exciting to have him on board after that vacancy was left and Raphael went on to his promotion with the City of Solvang. So Kyle was previously with the City of San Luis Obispo, and he brings just over 10 years of planning experience. His latest position as the housing coordinator with San Luis Obispo has already benefited us greatly with his insight into state law, as well as implementation of our codes. So again, we're really excited, and I just wanted to first introduce you to our new senior planner.
Welcome.
Exactly. Thank you. Okay, so with that, staff has prepared for your commission this evening a presentation on proposed amendments to the city's short-term rental ordinance. And if we could start the slide. Is it started? Oh, look at that. I'm looking at myself on the television. So the ordinance was first adopted in June of 2019. Following adoption, staff developed administrative rules to inform applicants of the program requirements to operate short-term rentals in the city. A Good Neighbor brochure was also created for permit holders to communicate to their visitors how to be considerate and responsible neighbors. City staff committed to regular reviews of the program to ensure its ongoing effectiveness, success, and to identify any deficiencies and areas for policy improvement and refinement. So in September of 2021, staff at that time provided a presentation on the status of the program, and the council gave further policy direction that limited multifamily development to one short-term rental permit, minimum stay requirement of 12 nights, that's for non-owner-occupied permits only, and they also directed staff to create and manage a wait list for interested participants for non-owner-occupied permits. Last August, staff provided another program and status report to the council at which additional policy direction was given based on staff's recommendations to improve the effectiveness of the program. The current regulations are outlined on your screen. Specifically, the program is limited to two types of permit holders. The first is owner-occupied, and the second is non-owner-occupied. The city placed a cap on the number of non-owner-occupied permits to ensure the character of neighborhoods throughout the city were not negatively impacted by visitors. There are 40 non-owner-occupied permits allowed in the coastal zone, and there are 60 allowed in the inland area of the city. Additional program regulations include a minimum night stay requirement. As addressed in my previous slide, the council directed a 12-night minimum stay requirement for non-owner occupied rentals, a maximum stay requirement for owner occupied rentals, which is 4 stays per year, not to exceed 30 stays. There's also a transient occupancy tax, which is required to be remitted on a monthly basis. The city charges 12%. And it also established compliance and enforcement program, which is currently administered by our code compliance officer as well as under my direction. For illustrative purposes, the map shown on your screen delineates the coastal zone and the inland area of Grover Beach. If you are within the blue, the light blue, or the coastal zone, there are a total number of 40 non-owner occupied permits which can be used and operated. And in the non-coastal or the inland zone, that's 60 non-owner occupied permits are allowed to operate within that area.
Can you pull up that map?
Did you want to
I'm not sure that we can on the slide, but there may be, is this map in the, it's not in the agenda packet online, is it?
This map is available on our website and can be viewed on your computer or on your device.
Thank you.
Yep, so that's groverbeach.org if you haven't been, most of you I think have been over there. Carry on.
Thank you. So to date, the city manages 112 short-term rental permits. 20 of those are non-owner occupied. You might be asking yourself, the math doesn't quite add up. We are currently in the process of processing 8 short-term rental permits from those that were on the wait list. The wait list currently sits at 60. The city has collected an estimated $1.77 million since 2019. Tax remittance to the city is self-reporting, and payment of taxes is required to be monthly through a third-party vendor. That same vendor, known as Host Compliance, also administers our registration and our compliance, and that's through their online hosting platform. To date, the city has processed 75 enforcement cases. 65 of those are related to unpermitted short-term rentals. So only 10 cases were for permitted short-term rentals, and those complaints ranged those violations ranged from noise to parking to trash. At the August 2023 meeting, the City Council directed staff to make several administrative changes as well as a few legislative changes to the ordinance. The first relates to extending the geographic range of a local contact. So currently, the ordinance requires an emergency contact or a local contact to be physically present at the site within 30 minutes. This has proved burdensome to some short-term rental permittees, and the council heard those complaints and asked staff to extend that geographic range. And so we decided that 45 minutes would encompass majority of the county. So should a local contact person living within the county be identified, they would be approved. So this is essentially geographic extent from San Miguel down to the furthest extent of Napomo, so the county. Council also asks staff to look into the minimum stay requirements for non-owner occupied permits. The intent here was to determine whether increasing the minimum stay requirement would result in additional tax revenue, transient occupancy tax revenue, as well as alleviate the waiting period some of the waitlistees have had to endure over the last few years. Staff conducted a thorough analysis and found that increasing the minimum stay requirement to 24 nights would result in approximately $6,000 in additional TOT revenue. If we increase to 50, it would result in $28,000 in additional TOT revenue. Based on this change, staff within the report does not recommend increasing the minimum stay requirement, but should your commission choose otherwise, we can discuss that following staff's presentation. Staff is recommending amendments to the ordinance to comply with state law. Any legally established STR that may become non-compliant with any proposed or future amendments to the short-term rental ordinance would need to come into compliance upon renewal. So this new language would require the short-term rental to come into compliance upon renewal, and it also intends to address any short-term rentals that were previously permitted within ADUs, JADUs, or residential projects established under the Home Act. Any active permits for these types of dwellings are not allowed to be renewed in accordance with the relevant government code sections that I outlined. And so more specifically to accessory dwelling units, these changes would prohibit ADUs within short-term rentals. State law requires that ADUs be rented for at least 30 days. So that makes ADUs ineligible to be utilized as an STR. An STR can be permitted for the primary residence on a property when an ADU is already constructed, or if the primary residence is used as an STR and the property owner constructs a new ADU. Currently, the city does not have any ADUs with STR permits. So we fortunately will not need to deal with that administrative tax come the new fiscal year. Lastly, staff has implemented a change based on council direction that allows for a single pass on the wait list should a permit open up for someone on that wait list or a permit become available. If that applicant passes the next round, should they not take advantage or should they no longer qualify based on the changes that we're making to the ordinance, they will be removed from the wait list and required to reapply. Prior to this meeting, staff distributed a survey to permit holders, those on the wait list, as well as through social media to the community at large. We received a total of 121 survey responses. That's as of 4:30 p.m. this evening, February 6th. It's available on our website for those that would like to review the questions as well as detailed responses. Of the 121 survey responses, program satisfaction was shown to be 75% considered the program neutral to very satisfied. Impact of short-term rentals on the neighborhoods, those responses indicated that 86% felt neutral to very satisfied. As far as operator challenges with regulations, this one was interesting. 2% reported that they had challenges, yet there was an option within this survey response, and we wanted to make sure that this was communicated to your commission. There was an option within the survey response to indicate, if yes, what were those challenges? And 17% of the respondents provided some challenges within that question. So, but only 2% reported that there were challenges. Lastly, we asked whether or not community members and permit holders felt that adjustments were needed to current regulations. 44% indicated no adjustments. However, there was another option for individuals taking the survey to provide specifics. If they wanted to see adjustments, what would those look like? And it ranged, but we found a few common themes, including reducing permitting fees and taxes, allowing more short-term rentals in the community, don't allow more short-term rentals in the community, improve the registration, permitting, and tax remittance process, ADUs should be allowed to have STR permits, and RVs should be allowed to have STR permits. These ordinance amendments affect chapters 4 and 9 of the city's development code. These chapters implement the city's adopted local coastal program. And because of this, an amendment to the city's LCP, or local coastal program, is required. City staff provided the draft ordinance to Coastal Commission staff, which is routine when you have coastal amendments like this. We want to get early feedback so that when we present the LCP amendment to coastal staff, they're not surprised and or have substantive changes that would require us to go back through the entire process. So we provided the preliminary draft to Coastal Commission and they had two comments. One, that they would like to maintain the cap on non-owner occupied permits in the coastal zone, as well as prohibit STRs within ADUs consistent with state law. And the first bullet, the maintain the cap on non-owner occupied permits in the coastal zone, is a direct response from the Coastal Commission themselves hesitating to approve additional STRs when they're being faced with a lot of appeals, as well as issues stemming from impacts of STRs on neighborhoods within the coastal zone. So where do we go from here? What are our next steps? So this evening, your commission will make a recommendation to the City Council. This can include just simply the changes that we've presented as part of the draft ordinance, as part of the packet. It can also include any, if consensus is found, any changes that your commission would like to see in addition to those that are outlined. Your recommendation is presented to the City Council, and our first introduction to the ordinance is scheduled for February 13th. That will be the first reading. This is on consent. It is not a public hearing item. At that point, the City Council is also scheduled for a second reading on February 25th. This is where the public hearing will occur. We will present the final draft ordinance, and the Council will take final action on February 25th. Those local amendments will then be forwarded as the LCP amendments. Sorry, let me rephrase. The LCP amendment, that's our local coastal program, those amendments will be forwarded to coastal staff, and they will present that to the Coastal Commission for action for STRs in the coastal zone. And at that point, once the Coastal Commission takes action, the ordinance will be affected in both the inland and coastal areas of the city. With most projects, our staff is required to assess whether or not there are any impacts to the environment. However, the proposed ordinance and the LCP amendments are not defined as a project within the meaning of the California Environmental Quality Act, more commonly referred to as its acronym CEQA. Section 15378B5. We love our numbers, sorry, but Section 15378B5 specifically calls out that revisions to ordinance are considered administrative and will not result in direct or indirect physical changes to the environment and are therefore exempt from CEQA. We're also not suggesting any increases to the number of STRs, so it wouldn't affect housing stock as it stands now. With that said, staff recommends this that your Planning Commission recommend to the City Council that they adopt Ordinance Number 24-02, amending the City's short-term rental ordinance and approving a local coastal program amendment. This concludes staff's presentation, and myself and Mr. Bell are available for any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Director Martin. Do any commissioners have questions for the staff?
Okay. Sure. You mentioned number of stays for min-max for owner-occupied, and I didn't catch those numbers before they passed. What were they?
Thank you. So an owner-occupied permit, that requires the property owner to live at the property when there is a stay, specifically between the hours of 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. They are required to maintain a four stays throughout the year, the calendar year, and up to, I think it's a maximum of 30. Yeah, maximum of 30 days in the, in the fiscal year, not calendar year. So four stays max, no more than 30 days.
No more than 30 days for stays max. So stays can be any length.
So it's considered per night. Okay. So 30 days is the maximum per year that an owner-occupied permit holder is allowed to.
And four is the minimum.
And four stays, yeah.
And what does host compliance charge you for basically for monitoring this process?
Our current expenditures that is within an approved contract is approximately $23,000.
You only talk about coastal and inland zones in the permitting. Is there any distinction at all with industrial, visitor serving, commercial zones, or are those treated just like everything else?
There are no specific distinctions between zones, but what one of our sections does under the applicability section of the short-term rental ordinance is specify that it must be within a legally constructed single-unit dwelling, multi-unit dwelling, multi-unit dwellings within a mixed-use project. So wherever those uses are permitted or permissible, whether it's industrial, commercial, residential, an STR would be allowed, subject to the limitations that are outlined in the ordinance.
Okay, so, and the reason I'm asking is because when 401 and 402 Grand are finally up and running, would any of those units eventually qualify for being STRs because they're in a mixed-use, visitor-serving, non-coastal, right?
Yeah, so I would need to look at the resolution for 402, but if my memory serves me, 401 specifically prohibited short-term rentals within those units. We may have applied that to 402 as well, but I don't have the answer to that right now.
Okay. I think that's all I have now. I may come back with something later.
Commissioner Halverson?
Yeah, I just wanted to make an observation, really. It seems like a lot of what we put into this ordinance is driven by state requirements and coastal commission requirements. It's hard to parse that out sometimes. You know, is it the city council's idea that we limit or extend time, or is it really the state law that keeps us from using ADUs as short-term rentals? It's a little confusing, I guess, when we try to incorporate all of these other players into our requirements. And I guess the other thing I was curious about is the 30-day max. So if you're renting out a unit for short term and you got 365 days in the year and you can only rent it out for 30, it seems restrictive. And I guess the basis for that, the reason for that, is we want to minimize the impact to the neighborhoods. Is that correct? Yeah. So yes. What is the expectation that the owner of these properties do with the property the other 330 days?
Well, it's an owner-occupied permit, so they live in it the remainder of the year.
Okay.
But they're allowed to supplement income and or provide for folks that are passing through, traveling nurses, for example, the opportunity to stay with them for a specified amount of time within
okay.
within the limitations of the ordinance.
All right. Thank you.
And to your first question, unless it was intended to be rhetorical,
it's just an observation.
Yeah.
A lot of times people don't realize a lot of the issues that we face at the Planning Commission turn out to be things that we have no control over. And I was just trying to make that point that this is another one where the state has stepped in, and for many different reasons they have set these things out for the local cities to follow. And I just want people to understand and appreciate that.
It's a great observation.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. In the draft that I received in advance of this meeting, I believe host compliance their website was hard-coded into that document. And I wondered is that still the case? Where is that website in the code, or is it in a different set of documents that's easier to change? And because if we happen to change vendors, do we need to rewrite the?
Sorry, so let me make sure that I'm understanding your question. Are you asking whether or not we are eligible to change vendors?
I'm just saying
without updating the code.
Yes. So if for example, in the code it says host compliance and it has their website,
mm-hmm.
would we want to write that as our third party compliance partner as a more general term rather than list them by name?
So
how does that?
I don't believe that host compliance is named in our draft ordinance itself. So I don't know that any change would be needed should we change vendors. I don't see that as an issue.
What's before me here looks different than what I received and made notes on. So that's, yeah, it looks.
If you could provide the page number, you know, there's also our administrative rules as well as our Good Neighbor brochure, which may indicate the specific vendor to use and the online platform to remit taxes. You may be thinking of the administrative rules.
Okay, that's
so
a different document.
Yeah, those we are, which was an attachment to the staff report. So that's why this piece that you were handed looks different. So those administrative rules are how we implement the program. And it's something that we provide to the short-term rental permit holders to make sure that they understand how to comply best. And we are updating that alongside these code changes. And should we need to make minor changes in the future, we can do so. They're not substantive and would not require commission or council action.
Okay. So I think I just misunderstood in the agenda packet which part was the more important piece. So that was one question.
So essentially, we have like two wait lists, right? Because there's one for the inland zone and one for the coastal zone. Would you say there are more folks waiting for a coastal permit or more waiting for the inland?
There are currently 50 waiting on the inland and 10 on the coastal wait list. Yeah, so a total of 60.
And in terms of housing units, is that 40 and 60 sort of proportional for the number of structures or places that could be?
The total percentage of the housing stock.
Yeah.
So for all permit holders, which is, again, at about 112 right now, for all permit holders, it's about 2% of our entire housing stock. So 2% of our existing housing stock is an STR.
Okay. And so is...
whether it's non-owner or owner-occupied, either one.
Is 40, which we have for the coastal zone, a larger percentage of what is in the coastal zone than... like, did we sort of weight it more towards the coastal zone in the... versus... so 40, if there are 40% of the housing units in the coastal zone anyway, or no?
No. So my understanding from the previous staff that prepared the ordinance, it was commensurate with the housing stock in each of those different areas.
Okay,
our inland area is significantly larger than our coastal area. We also have fewer residential neighborhoods within the coastal zone than we do within our inland.
Mm-hmm.
So it was commensurate based on the geographical bounds of both the coastal zone and the inland area.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. So I thought I had on the cap, although we're not looking right now to increase that, I wonder if at some point down the road we think of it more as a percentage versus a flat number.
That was something that was floated at City Council, but they chose to direct staff to look at increasing the minimum night stay rather than the total number of short-term rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so... neighborhoods would not necessarily become business districts for short-term rentals. But it is something that we can absolutely look at in the future. Should your commission find consensus, that is also something that you can recommend to the council, that we do that in addition to potentially increasing the minimum night stay requirement. I would hesitate to increase the cap in the coastal zone just because of the feedback that we've already received from Coastal Commission staff, but that is your commission's authority to do so, should you wish.
I guess maybe for discussion is whether that 40 and 60 makes sense. Like, if we want a total of 100, do we reduce what's in, and we have more people waiting for the inland, do we change it to 30, 70 or something? I don't know how that...
talk about it later.
Yeah. It would be something that you could discuss during Planning Commission deliberation to see if there's consensus there.
This is just questions for you. Anyone else have anything?
I did want to go back to one, and I don't see it, but maybe it's just because I read it so many times. I had a community member ask me about the 12-day duration for non-owner occupied, and their initial interpretation was that was 12 consecutive days for a stay. And I explained that, no, it's a total of 12 stays for the year. And when I look at item 14 on the list, it still reads like that to me, but maybe have somebody that's not familiar with it read it a couple of times to make sure that they're not thinking it's a 12-day long stay that's required, that it is a just cumulative 12 for the year.
Yes. So a short-term rental is considered any rental period of time that is less than 30 days within a legally constructed unit, as I described earlier, and the 12-night minimum stay per year is just 12 nights in a fiscal year. So July 1 to June 30th each fiscal year, you're required to have 12 nights of overnight stays.
And I see that, and you see that, and I'm just curious if you had somebody that wasn't familiar with the process read that, would they read something different? It seems clear to me, but...
No, I agree with you. When I first picked up the ordinance, it was confusing to me as well, but I think the changes that we're going to be making to the administrative rules are really going to help to clarify that for people. And should we get a phone call, it's the, you know, we're communicating that to any interested party, any permit holder should they not meet that minimum requirement at the halfway mark. So we're going to make sure that moving forward, we're calling folks at 6 months and saying, hey, you've only met it at this much. You need to get to this much by the end of the year. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have to work with you to make sure that you get it for the next year. Otherwise, we may need to revoke your permit. So just...
And maybe it's the interchangeable use of stay versus day, that
yes.
that if it wants to be communicated as days rather than stays, where a stay could be a multiple day stay, being consistent in that language.
Absolutely.
Nothing else.
Thank you very much. I will open this item for the public hearing. Is there anyone present who would like to comment on item two? I have one blue slip. Ms. Rosso, please, we'd love to hear from you.
Good evening. I just first would like to commend Megan for making a wonderful presentation, and thank you for being so eloquent in your words and describing the things that I had concerns about before the meeting. And you guys, your changing of the guards is rather easy, so good job. My name's Vanessa Rosso. I reside in Grover Beach. I am a short-term rental permit holder and have been probably since they began this, which is a great opportunity for us here in Grover Beach. I do have a couple questions regarding the 12-night minimum, which is amazing, which works out because obviously we have a lot of things that we have to contend with in order to get someone to stay at our home. So we just greatly appreciate the night stay being the 12-night and not going up to the 24-night requirement, because we found that some platforms that we've been hosting on, such as Airbnb and VRBO, they've been wonderful, but we've had some challenges along the way with VRBO and getting like spam bookings, and so it's really messed up like our numbers, and it's taken away some of our nights, which is very frustrating. So we're trying to work on platforms that are really legitimate, and Airbnb seems to be one. It seems like everything was kind of inundated there for a while. I'm grateful that we do have a limit on permits, because we just feel like it would be really impacted in our small town if we had too many permits. I'd like to share the wealth with everybody, in other words, share the opportunity. However, it could impact all of us in a very negative way if we open it up too far, just to say. My question was regarding if there is an ADU on the property and you are a non-owner occupied, is it possible to have a long-term renter in the ADU as well as have the house as a non-owner occupied? And there are two detached units. Am I understanding that is okay?
I'm going to have staff answer that after we finish the public comment period.
Perfect.
So we'll hold on to that question.
Okay. And then my other question is that... If we had a is there a opportunity at any point in time that the availability for the ADU to become a rental, short-term rental? We would like to see that as well. So we don't know which way we could propose that, to have both a ADU and a non-owner occupied house, and would that be on the same permit to have an ADU as well as a non-owner occupied at the same address on the same permit? Those are my questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room who wanted to speak to item two? I don't see any hands. Is there anyone on the phone?
No, there's not.
I will close public comment. Hearing no further comments, we will let the commission provide comments on the report. So here's where we get to talk to each other.
We do.
Chairman,
yes.
Would you like me to answer the questions that Ms. Ozo
raised? Yes, that would be great. Sorry, let's start with
that. No, not at all. So the first question, if there's an ADU on the property, could the primary be used as a non-owner occupied? The answer is yes, and it would be considered a non-owner occupied unit. They would not have to reside on the property, and the ADU could be rented as a long-term rental, or the property owner could stay in the ADU, either one. Does that answer your first question?
Yeah.
Wonderful. For the second question, opportunity for availability for an accessory dwelling unit to be used as an STR. So just echoing Commissioner Halverson's earlier comment, we are preempted by state law. It prohibits ADUs to be used as STRs because it would undermine the intent of what accessory dwelling units are meant to do, which is to provide more affordable housing within the different communities. So unfortunately, we cannot make that change. Even if we did have it, we would then be out of compliance with state law, which would not be recommended. So the other question, though, should state law ever change that that policy or that standard, our ordinance currently limits permits to one property. And this is part of our applicability section of on page one of the ordinance. Which specifically states that a short-term rental permit shall be limited to the issuance of one permit per property or one permit per building when units share common walls within multi-unit dwellings. So if that is something that you would like to address, I'm happy to answer any questions on that.
No.
But short of the answer is that no, you could only have one STR permit on the property if you had two detached structures and one was an ADU and the other the primary.
And that also applies to, so is the Home Act SB 9, that's the, which is the lot splits and permits duplexes on all what used to be R1 lots. So in that case, one half of the duplex could be an STR, but the other would need to be long-term rented or owner-occupied?
So our ordinance prohibits STRs from single-room occupancy facilities, two-unit housing development projects, urban lot splits, ADUs, and JADUs. So you would not be eligible to have a short-term rental within within any unit that is defined under the Home Act. And again, that's consistent with state law.
Do we have anything that's been built under SB 9?
We have one SB 9 lot split within the city now, but they have not applied for, nor would they be issued an STR permit.
Yep.
First, they'd be on the wait list for a few years. Just kidding.
Okay, so we answered the public's question.
Do you feel that you have all the information you need?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
So I guess I would, I don't think it's anything we need to forward on to the city council, but I agree pretty strongly with the wording of the 12-night minimum sentence. I mean, with adding a couple words, I think you could clarify that, because I think everybody here reads that, because I had the same reaction. You wonder, you got to sign somebody up for a short-term rental for 12 days. Didn't make sense. And then you read it again, and you go, well, they must mean this. So I that's a very easy fix, and I don't know if you could do it before the city council meeting, but that's an easy one. You know, as far as other things, changes that we could recommend, I think you guys have done a great job of considering the City Council's recommendations and weighing them and deciding, for the most part, I think, to keep things kind of the way they are, except for updating some of the wording to show that it's not a new program, it's an existing program now. You know, we could talk all night about, you know, is 30 days enough? Should we open it up for more STRs, but I think we've kind of reached that happy medium. And I was looking at Arroyo Grande and Paso Robles, Pismo Beach's programs, and Arroyo Grande is kind of similar to us as far as number of units and that kind of thing. Pismo Beach, it looks like they're trying to eliminate them altogether. They have a small number, and their last input from the city council was not to issue any new ones. So they may slowly retire them as people move or whatever, and they'll get rid of them completely eventually. So I thought that was interesting in contrast to what we in Arroyo Grande are doing, which to me seems more fair-handed. When I first read all of this, it seemed very limited, but I do understand that We're trying to minimize the impact. We're trying to preserve a lot of this real estate for long-term rentals, given our housing crisis. I'm happy with the way, except for that one little exception about the 12-night minimum, I'm happy with the way you've presented the changes. I don't have any other recommendations.
Commissioner Swift?
So you talk about one permit per property. And, you know, I guess if I look at this process going on for a long time, is there anything in the way it's currently written that keeps developers or large investors from slowly buying up properties and I would say almost monopolizing the STR process, right? Is that if a single entity can buy multiple properties and eventually get multiple STRs and be a mini little hotel, you know, empire in the town, is there anything to limit that? Do you see any signs of that happening, that you have the same individuals getting multiple STRs in multiple locations? And should some language be considered for the future to try to head that off if it looks like it might be happening? There's a lot to get in one sentence.
I think I got it. Our ordinance specifically does not address that. However, the establishment and the administration of our wait list helps to curb that. So just as an example, let's say a new condominium project comes in and they want to have each one of them be on the STR permit wait list. They would only be allowed to have one that they could also, but they would have to wait on the wait list for everybody else to either pass or be addressed. So at this point in time, I don't see that as a potential issue because we have a wait list that is so extensive, and we would only allow them one position on that wait list for the property. I don't necessarily see it as an issue at this point in time, but if you did want us to address it, we could research what other jurisdictions are doing and see if they have any language that would prohibit that. I do know prior to Pismo's moratorium, they did have specific language related to the type of ownership that would be allowed to have a permit. We could consider that language and incorporate it into the applicability section. In addition to the unit has to be as such, well, the property owner has to meet certain requirements as well.
But don't you think the 30-day max would restrict an investor from trying to do that? And why? What are they going to do the other? Again, what are they going to do the other 330 days?
The 30-day max is on the owner-occupied. I don't think there's any max.
Is there no max
on
that?
Non-owner-occupied?
There is no max, just okay. The minimum.
Gotcha. Right, so
if you buy
a bunch of them up, and over time you could have a single, you know, investment.
Get a motel.
Yeah. With a bunch of houses.
Well, another way that that's curbed is in previous to a lot of the ordinance changes that I've seen throughout the county, STR permits would transfer on sale of the property. That doesn't happen here. So once there's a sale of the property, they would need to apply to be on that wait list. So even if a company or an LLC were to come in and want to buy up a property that had an STR permit, they would have to complete the application, and they'd start at the bottom of that wait list.
Yeah, that might be the biggest deterrent.
Yes.
Any other thoughts from either of you?
No.
I appreciate you mentioning what you did, Commissioner Swift, about sort of this, because I thought about it too, like, should we be concerned about the number of permits a single entity has? The other thought I had, and this may be controversial, is whether there should be a limit to the number of times you can renew your permit. 10 years, 7 years. What are the consequences of having, sort of in perpetuity certain properties in short-term rental, and then there never being a chance for other people to participate in it? I look at that from another perspective of once you're operating one of these and you get good at it, like, you're a good host. I looked at Airbnb today. We have a number of super hosts
in Grover Beach, which is great because it's expensive to come and stay here, and these properties provide more families an opportunity to come and enjoy our region. So I do appreciate that. Also balancing that with, you know, we need people who live here to be able to, who work here to be able to live here. So I'm not ready to propose some sort of cap at this point. It doesn't sound like we need it. We have enough other guardrails in place, but, wanted to put it out there in the air. I don't think I have any other questions to discuss. So if we're ready to move on, I think we can. So I will invite a motion to recommend to the City Council. Does everyone have a copy of the motion that is presented here? Should I read it, or the person who is proposing it or who is making the motion would read it?
Yes.
Okay. I would read it. Okay.
I just ask for one point of clarification? Was there consensus to modify the language related to the minimum night stay to make it more clear as to what the requirement was? And if so, that should be made part of the motion.
Okay. Shall we figure out what we wanted to say?
How we want to move?
Number 14?
Yes. You can also provide a general statement that we just make that minimum night stay requirement more clear.
Clarification 12 purposes. Overnight stays means 12 nights.
Correct.
Not 12 chunks of 12 individual people who might be there for multiple nights.
Correct.
I think it's the word stays that is confusing.
Add the word total.
Minimum of yes. Total 12, or no, minimum of 12 nights.
12. And again, we don't necessarily have to nail down the exact language. You can provide a general statement to staff and that we... that we clarify the language as we present it to the council.
Okay.
If I could also potentially make a suggestion, you could recommend approval of the ordinance as is, and I think staff would likely be able to provide examples within their the policy handbooks that are handed out to individuals who are running STRs that would be able to adequately clarify the ordinance and also provide examples that they could refer to, and that might be a little bit easier for individuals to reference that versus having to change an ordinance later on with the language. They could probably provide that clarifying language within those guidebooks.
Within the administrative?
Happy to do so within the administrative rules as well as the Good Neighbor brochure.
That sounds okay. Fine with me.
Yep.
And I think our motion is to approve this as, or recommend approval of this as provided.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good.
We'll see if I can muster that motion.
Go for it.
So I move that we recommend to the City Council to adopt the ordinance amending Grover Beach Municipal Code, Article 9, Development Code Section 4.10.185, short-term rentals and related sections, and approve a local coastal program amendment. Is that right?
Great. Do I have a second?
Yes, I second it.
Clerk Ratana, would you begin a roll call vote?
Vice Chair Swift?
Yes.
Commissioner Halverson?
Yes.
And Chair Mann?
Yes. The motion passes unanimously. There are no other regular business items on here. We do have a moment for any other commissioner comments. Commissioner Swift?
I do have comments. So I know we've heard a couple of times, this is actually related back to what we just approved, but I think it's more of a general comment, is that, we hear people talking about STRs eating into workforce housing. And I thought it was a very interesting read to go through the Visit Slow report from the fall and see that no, in fact, most of the STRs are not workforce housing. And so, I hope we can kind of put that argument to bed in the future, that we're not talking about renting out workforce housing that would either go, otherwise go to people in the sort of moderate income range. I hear that argument a lot against STRs, and I think it's not a valid argument if you look at the report from Business Flow. Mm-hmm. So that was encouraging. That was a good report. And then we were all at the grand opening for 402, weren't we?
We were, the three of us.
The three of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was.
It was very impressive.
Exciting.
It was great.
I was. I expected a much smaller event, and lots of people, and a drone in the sky, and photographers and news people. It was quite the thing. So we got some really good recognition out of that.
Good things happened.
For those who are listening, David, or Commissioner Swift is referring to a report that came out from Visit SloCal that was commissioned last year. I think it came out in September, and it looks at the impact of STRs on the housing in this county. So it's worth a read. You can find it online, and if I don't know how to direct you to it, but if you were to Google Visit SloCal and STR report, it should pop up. So if you're interested in reading that. An interesting piece of data that came out of that report is that it was like 2.4% of the homes in the county are in short-term rentals, but 12.9% are vacant, which I found really interesting. I'm not quite sure why that would, or how they're counting vacancies, but I think that that was an interesting, because as we look at the impact of what's being, you know, used for other purposes than housing, it's like if one out of eight homes is empty.
Probably second homes.
Yeah, second homes, yeah. Exactly.
Vacation homes, yeah.
So, anyway, any other comments? I will call on Director Martin for her community development report.
Thank you. Fairly short this evening, so I was just going to thank you all for attending the 402 West Grand Avenue groundbreaking. Sorry I wasn't able to be there, but as you've seen, it is currently under construction and looking really great. That corner is just going to completely transform, so we're very, very excited. And secondly, 950 El Camino Real update for you. They will be, they're moving along very, very quickly. They're going to be starting their public improvements here May or June, and we will likely be bringing back to your commission an environmental document for your consideration just based on a couple of project changes here in March. So just a little heads up on that you'll see that come through again. And other than that, I'm available for any questions that you may have of anything going on around the community. Happy to answer anything.
Thank you very much. Are we ready to adjourn?
Do it.
With no further business before the commission, I adjourn this meeting at 6:58 p.m.